Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello there. And welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party. On today's show, we give our thoughts on Disney Plus's Obi-Wan Kenobi series. Was the Force strong with this one, or was there a great disturbance? I'm your co-host Dallas King, and with me is the Padawan to my Jedi Master, it's Lee Hutchison. How are you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. It feels like it's been a long, long time since we've ever discussed a Star Wars episode, so this will be something a bit new, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Did we do an episode on The Mandalorian? Or no, I think because you got Disney Plus. You got Disney Plus much later than everyone else, didn't you? So...
yeah, I'm hijacking a friend of the show's Disney Plus. So I think I'm one of like 10 people that they have on that account. So I've watched it definitely a little bit more in the past. I think this year I've had it for. I swapped my MUBI account for her Disney Plus. So, you know, someone is getting high quality entertainment that's constantly topped up with some of the best filmmakers on the planet, and the other one has Disney Plus.
Exactly. So, I mean, and that's perfectly fine, you know, as long as you're not sharing Netflix accounts, you know, it's all good. So, I mean, I guess before we dive into Obi-Wan, I mean, I'll get your thoughts on the... I'm assuming that you've caught up with the rest of the Star Wars series that have been on.
No.
You haven't. So you haven't watched The Mandalorian, The Book of Boba Fett, and The Mandalorian Season 2. I say, actually, The Book of Boba Fett, I mean, you know, Mandalorian 2.5.
When Disney Plus first came out, I got it for like maybe the sort of first month of lockdown, and I was kind of like, you know, I'll watch like The Simpsons and I'll dive into all this other material that was there, try and get me through these dark days of lockdown. And then when I discovered that I was pretty much just using it for watching The Simpsons, I was like, I'm not getting my money's worth out of this. So I only ever kind of watched the first few episodes of the Mandalorian, and I've never felt compelled to kind of dive into it. And I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I'm not really much of a Star Wars fan. Like, I'll, you know, a film I would go see probably opening weekend, but with something like a kind of the Star Wars TV show, you know, I'm not overly bothered. It takes a significant amount to get me definitely interested in it.
I see. Well, I mean, I've obviously watched all of them, you know, because, you know, I was intrigued by The Mandalorian. I enjoyed The Mandalorian. The Book of Boba Fett was rather pointless, in my opinion. And, you know, a series is in trouble when I think episode 4 of your series doesn't include your title character and just includes The Mandalorian. So... I think it's fair to say that they were not really, weren't really sure with the direction that they were going. But so, I mean, the fact that you've watched an entire Star Wars series on Disney Plus now, what was it about Obi-Wan Kenobi that piqued your interest to dedicate the time to watching it?
Yeah, it was Ewan McGregor, to be honest. Like,
one of our own, eh?
Yeah, you got to support one of your own. And like, I wasn't really overly bothered about Star Wars or an Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of TV series, but I was like, you know, the trailers that people seem to be heralding as this incredible kind of, you know, Star Wars, but it's going to be elevated and it's going to be like...
Stick Jewel of the Fates on it and you're bound to get some pants wet, I think.
Exactly. And I was kind of like, oh, okay, I'll give it a go and I'll give it a watch. But ultimately, you know, it was really just sort of Ewan McGregor that got me interested and maybe probably got me to watch more than just the one episode as well, when my mind was telling me to abort quite quickly.
I see. So, I mean, were you a fan of McGregor's performance as Obi-Wan from the prequel trilogy?
Yeah, he was fine, wasn't he? Like, he just didn't have much to do. He was one of the few things in that entire prequel trilogy, probably Phantom Menace aside, because he didn't have much to do in that, where he had a little bit of a spark. He seemed interested, happy to be there. But ultimately, you know, he was the kind of the best of a pretty bad bunch of films. And, you know, there was always that interest in the back of your mind of thinking, always, you know, he's a much older man now, you know, it could be really interesting. You kind of think Ewan McGregor is someone that does pick his projects wisely. You know, he's not necessarily associated with like bad movies or bad TV shows that he kind of gets involved in. So, you know, to get him back on board, it felt pretty good because I kind of got the impression he'd been pretty burned by the sort of whole experience.
Yeah, no, I mean, I mean, I was incredibly excited when obviously he was announced as being cast in the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi back in sort of, what was it, 98? I mean, I was sort of a huge fan of Shallow Grave and Trainspotting and stuff like that. He was this exciting new talent from Scotland, and then he was being cast, you know, in the biggest franchise of all time. You know, he's got that link to Star Wars. His uncle, Dennis Lawson, was Wedge Antilles in the original trilogy. And I mean, I think one of the exciting things about this was sort of him in this role was, you know, he got obviously, you know, the majorly cool lightsaber fight with Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn at the end. But I think it was more like, for me, I think it was like seeing like the... It was like the, you know, something which they rarely do these days. And it's, you know... I think a loss that, you know, more places don't do sort of the physical media releases and stuff like that. But I think it was about a 90-minute, nearly 2-hour documentary on the making of The Phantom Menace. And I think it was this.
That is the best thing about the prequels, that documentary. You can find it on YouTube just now. It was part of the DVD, but I find myself watching that every few years. And I would say this about the Star Wars world, like, you would never in a million years get that on a Disney product these days. Like, it is the most uncomfortable to watch at times movie. It's brilliant.
Yeah, no, I think it's like the scenes where, like, you know, he's like doing, he gets to choose his lightsaber handle, and he gets to, you know, they're doing the fighting, and it's like talking about, you know, as everyone does. I mean, I think Hayden Christensen also mentioned that the fact that, you know, when you start doing the fight, you start doing the noises, and then they tell you to stop doing that because they add them in later. And it's like, I think it was the fact that they were going too fast when they were doing the fights. I think with him and Ray Park at the end, they were going too fast. So, I mean, I enjoyed, you know, he didn't have a huge amount to do in The Phantom Menace. Attack of the Clones, I feel that, you know, the mullet was a choice. I think he got saddled with the worst sort of subplot of that film, but I think he really sort of brought it back with Revenge of the Sith. I think his work in that was probably some of the best in the prequel trilogy, him and Hayden Christensen's relationship in that. And I think everyone can agree probably the best lightsaber fight of all time in that film. And, you know, the film which spawned 1,000 memes and the things that he gets quoted basically more than anything else. The Hello There, well, technically was spawned by the original film in Alec Guinness. But obviously, I Have the High Ground and all that. So, I mean, I was excited to see him back. I know he'd been skirting around the issue for many, many years. I think he was open to it, and I guess it was just a case of being able to wait and announce, you know, that a project would finally be going ahead, you know, once they found the right story. I read a story, I think, this week, so that apparently one of the original writers had pitched it as a trilogy of movies. It's like, really? I mean, we'll get into it, but I'm doubtful that there was enough story to really fill 6 episodes. But so, Obi-Wan, latest Star Wars limited series, following on from The Mandalorian and The Book of Mandalorian, Boba Fett, I mean, and it's directed by Deborah Chow, who directed some episodes of The Mandalorian. So this is set 10 years after the events of Revenge of the Sith, and 9 years before the events of A New Hope, where we find Ben Kenobi living a nomadic existence on Tatooine, when the threat of Grand Inquisitors and a call for help from an old friend see him dig up his lightsaber, literally, and prepare for battle once more, all whilst unaware that Darth Vader is still searching for him. So, I think, you know, the series clearly designed to give Ewan McGregor another opportunity to play Obi-Wan. I think when there was a lot of talk about what could the story potentially be, you know, would it be like a Seven Samurai? Maybe perhaps, you know, he's brought back, you know, for one sort of final job to sort of maybe protect a group of people on Tatooine or something. But no, it turns out that really it's just kind of been used to fill in the blanks and grey areas left by Kenobi's, you know, by his own admission, rather vague phrasing of, you know, from a certain point of view, or even people just not finishing their sentences. Like when Darth Vader said, "I sense something, a presence I've not felt since ... And then that could have meant, it could have meant from the original trilogy, but no, it could have meant a point in time in between those. You know, it's, I don't know how you feel about you know, this style of storytelling, because there's been a lot of talk on the internet about, well, I think the biggest thing was about, well, a lot, why doesn't Ewan McGregor look like Alec Guinness? You know, he's only got 9 years to go, and it's like, well, A, they're two different actors, and B, you know, it's a funny sci-fi fantasy. I mean, give him a little bit of wiggle room. But I think even if you sort of look at the original trilogy, where he's talking about Darth Vader was a pupil of mine before he turned to evil, you know, he betrayed and murdered your father, and then he was like, you told me that he betrayed and murdered my father. So, well, what I said is true from a certain point of view, but again, Obi-Wan Kenobi seems to leave out the fact and doesn't tell Luke that actually, well, when I say a certain point of view, what I'm really meaning is that I chopped off your father's legs and arm and left him to burn to death on a volcano. But, you know, hey, who's splitting hairs here? I mean, what did you make of the story, the initial sort of being able to go back and sort of fill in some of these blanks? Were you ever that desperate to figure out, you know, what it all meant and what he'd been up to all this time?
No, not really, because it's such a, it's tied up pretty well in that Revenge of the Sith that, yeah, he's just going to watch over him, and you kind of think with Tatooine that, yeah, he's going to get up to enough sort of exploits, there's enough kind of, you know, villainry and scum there that will keep him kind of engaged and just sort of, you know, being sort of hiding out and nothing really much more than that. And that's perfectly okay, you know, a lot of these little things, like, it never particularly bothered me. And then it's now lines that I was perfectly happy with in something like A New Hope, then just become kind of mildly annoying now, or it's just things where you feel like, God, that really added in an unnecessary subplot. And some of the reaching people are doing now, where it's like, oh, when Obi-Wan sacrificed himself, it's because he saw the twins were reunited again, and you're just like, oh, for goodness sake. It's just some of the stretching and that is just unimpressive. And I thought, you know, a simple Obi-Wan Kenobi story would perhaps be maybe something a little bit more spiritual in the desert, or ultimately, you know, just sort of dealing with, you know, life on Tatooine, which we know can be a little bit rough and interesting. So, you know, this wasn't really the story that I think was the best choice to make. I think it was possibly the worst choice that they could have made. You know, there's like an element that I think in some of the episodes they did a little bit better than others was perhaps like the parallels between, you know, Darth Vader on his ship and Obi-Wan on his mission, and sort of, you know, almost kind of the crossovers between the two, and that's kind of interesting, you know, these two damaged men after a huge war and fallout and everything that kind of along with it, that's quite interesting. But all the extra stuff with, like, you know, rescuing a little girl was just like, I genuinely, if it wasn't for Ewan McGregor, I would have chucked it after episode one when I realized that there was gonna be a little Princess Leia involved.
Yes, we'll get onto her in a minute, but I think that particular story decision, which was, you know, to their credit, kept quiet, potentially for good reason. You know, it was as secretive as Grogu or Baby Yoda appearing in The Mandalorian. But it just comes back down to, for me, Star Wars' biggest problem at the moment, and that is their refusal to let go of the past. You know, I could wax lyrical, I'm sure, for like a good hour about how Last Jedi was about letting go of the past and seeking out new adventures and new possibilities, but no, yes, it's another Star Wars series that's set on Tatooine, and, you know, he could have interacted with anyone, he could have gone to different planets perhaps and interacted with anyone, but no, it's all brought back down to the Skywalkers yet again and the refusal to budge from this. And I think that was probably to its biggest detriment. I mean, yes, there's a whole argument to be made now about the fact that he had major interactions with Princess Leia when she was growing up, but, you know, one sort of little line towards the end about, oh no, we know we've got to keep this a secret, so, you know, that's why you refer to me as General Kenobi and working for your dad during the Clone Wars and not for the fact that you rescued me as a 10-year-old girl when I was captured. But hey, that's, yeah, a whole other argument to be made. So, I mean, yeah, we could, I guess, dive into the Leia bit first. I mean, when it was blatantly apparent that she was being brought back into this as essentially a Deus Ex Machina to get Obi-Wan Kenobi almost out of retirement. I mean, how did you feel about that? I'm guessing from your, it was like, really?
Yeah, it's the worst impulses. Like, I didn't like the Last Jedi, but I love that theme of the film of, like, let the past die. Like, just the execution of some of the plots in the film is pretty bad. You know, but otherwise, you know, it's become, you know, it's definitely got the most to say about any Star Wars kind of film. The rest don't really have anything really to say, do they? But with this, it was just like, oh, for goodness sake, like, do we really need to have, like, a young Leia show? And it's just one of those moments, like, you have in your head, you know, even if you're not a Star Wars fan, about, like, what an Obi-Wan Kenobi show could be and how interesting it could be and how much elevated in terms of a drama it could be. And then you're just like, oh no, like, this is what they're going to do. It's going to be about this young girl. You can now imagine the Wikipedia page on Leia is just all this big thing. And, you know, it doesn't really even make sense. Not so much. It just, you know, I'd be interested in a sort of a plot line about, like, how do you lure, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi out of hiding, but don't make it little Leia. It's just, you know, fair play, they managed to keep it quiet. But watching just that, I could just feel my heart sinking, going, oh yeah, you know, I was right to have low expectations of Star Wars, as always.
Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing against, you know, the performance of the young actress. I thought, you know, she delivered a young, probably the wrong word, but spunky performance, as, you know, kind of, you could see that young girl becoming sort of Carrie Fisher in the other one. So nothing against the performance. I just think it was the wrong choice to have the two of them so closely linked in the past. And yeah, there are other ways to go. I mean, and for me, it felt almost as well like she was turning into a bit of Kim Bauer in the original series of 24, where, you know, she'd be kidnapped and then she'd be rescued, or then she would be escaped and then she'd be kidnapped again. And I was half expecting one bit where she needed to be rescued from a giant space jaguar or whatever it was that Kim got into trouble with in the first series of 24. It just felt very repetitive for, like, the first three episodes. And I think this is a problem with the limited series thing, is that we all know that they're building to a confrontation between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader / Anakin Skywalker again. And it felt like, you know, the whole Leia subplot was just to set in motion this confrontation at the end. And the fact that they had to keep recycling this bit where, you know, she escapes and then he gets captured again, he has to go find her on this planet and then he has to go find her on another planet. And it's just like, it got very, very tiresome. And it was like, yeah, I mean, this could have been shrunk down into a much more limited series. And yeah, I think if it had focused purely on the two of them, I think there could have been something very special. Because I think for me, the final episode is probably the best episode of the series, and we'll get into that in a bit. But, you know, we do have some new characters coming along. Obviously, there's Moses Ingram's Reva, one of the Grand Inquisitors, who is the one that sets that plan in motion. You know, she's got a link to all of them, which isn't revealed until sort of later on in the show. We've got faces like Kumail Nanjiani is a Jedi in inverted commas, and Benny Safdie as a Jedi as well. I'm still waiting for them to announce the Black Series figure of him so I can buy that. And then with the Drifter Bruce Wayne figure, which I've got, have a action figure reenactment of Good Time, you know, looking forward to that day. But I mean, were there any sort of highlights in the new faces that they did manage to bring in?
Not overly. I was quite interested in sort of Benny Safdie, and yeah, just some of, like, the acting talent that they got in was pretty interesting, but they sort of were either just, like, really brief characters or killed off quite quickly, or they didn't get much to do. And, you know, Reva was a sort of an interesting kind of character, but I think it was completely underserved. Again, you know, a very simple change to her plot line. Like, obviously she's this young kid that kind of survived the killing of the Jedi Temple, and, you know, she's looking to sort of work her way up to, like, may almost take her shot at Darth Vader. But then you kind of watch it and you're just like, oh, that's an interesting story. And that should almost be potentially one of the climaxes. But it sort of climaxes an episode early, then has a ridiculous kind of climax in the next episode. And it's just like going, oh, they've had years to work on this and it's gone through many different drafts. And it just feels like even the choices that they made with her really undersold what was proven to be one of the highlights.
You know, I mean, I thought she was a really potentially interesting character. I thought her performance was great. She got a couple of cool fight scenes and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, the toxic fandom, which is rampant in the Star Wars universe, that seemed to have a problem with her, is just really, really sad. I mean, when the star and producer of your new show has to come out on social media and berate the fans for acting like a bunch of twats, then you know that you've got an issue. And I mean, it's like,
not the first time with Star Wars in particular. Not.
And I mean, it's one of those weird things which, you know, obviously, you know, this is a series which has kind of gone in reverse. You know, we had the original trilogy and then we had the prequels and stuff like that. And it's like, obviously, the original trilogy, I think you can be quite critical that, you know, there was not a lot of diversity in the original trilogy. But apart from Lando Calrissian in the second one, who, you know, then was initially a bit of a, you know, double crosser and stuff like that. But then you go back into the prequels and all these TV shows, and it's like there's now lots of diversity, which somehow seems to disappear when you go back through the original trilogy, but then comes back around at the other side. And yeah, no, it's just sad. It's like these people saying, not my Star Wars and stuff like that. It's like, it's never your Star Wars. It's like, you know, it's everyone's Star Wars. So, but yeah, again, that's a whole other long, horrible conversation that we need to have. So, I mean, sort of looking at the sort of plot where, I guess we'll come on to the ending. And for me, the sort of final showdown, which was the strongest element of it, where we finally get Darth Vader versus Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I guess, I think, you know, finally, I think after five or six episodes, finally justifying the return of Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker, I think, because I think up until about episode four, people were going, oh, why did they bring him back? What, just to have one sort of shot of him in a cloak in some sort of vision? It was like, you know, what is he going to be able to bring to it? And I think he did actually manage to bring something. I mean, what did you make of their final sort of showdown on, I'm going to say, an unnamed planet at this point, which was really, really dark, and it made it difficult to see. I mean, oh yeah, the lightsabers look cool when they all glow up, but I mean, I know you've got a lot of thoughts on the filming and the stylistic choices.
The direction, and I really feel sorry for Deborah Chow, because, you know, I'm sure she's a great director, but this was really, it was really poor, borderlining on incompetent, like, production. I thought, like, throughout the series, you know, I am a Star Trek fan, and I'm used to cheap looking sci-fi, and it doesn't matter, it really doesn't matter. And I feel like that is such a really poor criticism from, like, a fair weather fan like me to throw at any sort of thing. But I was just watching it all the time and, like, going, oh, the lighting's terrible, the cinematography's bad. I mean, just, like, the direction at times seemed just really incompetent. I think there's the bit where maybe it's, like, episode five, where, like, Obi-Wan and Reva are kind of talking through sort of, like, Jedi kind of mind communication. It's almost meant to sort of mirror that, like, they're at the other side of a wall to each other. And it's just like, oh, yeah, it wasn't shot in a very interesting way. It just felt really boring. And even the lightsaber fights, like, for me, my favorite lightsaber fight would probably have been maybe sort of the Empire Strikes Back one, but I really think fondly of the one at the finale of Force Awakens between Rey and Kylo Ren. Just, again, really intimate, sort of, like, it's, you know, tight shots, and you sort of, you, they use a lot of the lighting of the lightsabers, which they're kind of going to go for here. But so many times in the fight sequences, and I'm not, I don't really particularly care if a fight sequence is good or not, it's not the most important thing, but when I was watching that, I was like, oh, I can barely make out what's happening, and it just looked very murky and unclear, and I was sitting there thinking, going, I'm watching this on like a 50-inch 4K TV, and I'm not even sitting far away from it, I can barely make out what's kind of going on, and I just think there's such a low bar sometimes online for like the, you know, the acclaim some of these things get, and it's like, you know, it genuinely was rubbish, but, you know, the climax of it all was quite interesting in terms of this, like, broken mask and, you know, the voice modulating. I thought, oh, that's really good. And it was, like, the highlight of the show, in addition to probably the scene where Obi-Wan realizes Anakin Skywalker is still alive. Otherwise, it was just, like, you know, it just felt really poor and just, as I say, incompetent. And there should be no excuse for that in this type of investment of a product.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've got the scenes where they've obviously shot on either sort of outdoors or sound stages where they're sort of recreating sort of Mos Eisley type things and stuff like that. Or you've got all the scenes shot in location or sort of sound stages with the sort of Tatooine exteriors and stuff like that, which, you know, evokes, you know, your memories of the first one, which is fine. But then you've got all the stuff which shot in the volume, which was used, you know, pretty well on The Mandalorian. And, you know, this is sort of like replacing the sort of your typical sort of green screen sound stages, which I think Marvel are still predominantly using, but the Batman used it to great effect. I think I didn't really even notice. I think it was like the scenes where Batman and Selina Kyle are at the top of the building and it's like looking out over Gotham. That was done on the volume, and, you know, I couldn't really tell, you know, that was a soundstage. But here, and I think I had the same problem as you. It was like very, very dark and murky, where I tried watching it on my TV and I had to shut the blinds, I had to turn the lights off to try and get it, to the point where I actually had to stop watching it on my TV and transfer to actually watching it on a laptop instead, because it was, and then put my brightness up because there were scenes where it was very, very dark. And, you know, I don't know if that's just Disney Plus in general, but it was just like, it's not a great viewing experience. And yeah, I think if you're watching something like that, it will always have a negative effect. If you're straining to be able to see what's going on, and I mean, I know you said about the Marvel movies in the past, which is all very sort of dark and murky and stuff like that, and this, I think, suffered from the same thing. But, you know, that final sort of battle was good. You had the reversal where Vader knocks Obi-Wan Kenobi down into, you know, the ground comes out from under him, so essentially he's now staring at him down in a pit, and, you know, at that point he has the high ground. But then Vader, Anakin makes his mistake again and just leaves Obi-Wan Kenobi. So he gets up to the point where he then starts lifting up rocks and throwing them at him. So he literally has the high ground, because it's ground which has been lifted up high. And then you get that moment where he's like, you know, I'm sorry, Anakin, you know, for what he did to him. And then he's like, and then we get the sort of, I guess, sort of slight retconning of why Obi-Wan says what he says, and he says, I am not your failure, Obi-Wan. You did not kill Anakin, I did. And, you know, essentially he's becoming Darth Vader 100%. Anakin Skywalker, for all purposes, is dead. And I think that, with the, like you say, with the voice modulation cracking and changing between Hayden's voice and the James Earl Jones, not him, but his voice that went through a computer to recreate Darth Vader's voice, I think that was a really good moment. I think that's where Ewan McGregor coming back was worth it, because the emotion that he was able to put into that, I think, was fantastic. It was a very, very moving scene, something which you don't normally get in Star Wars. You could really feel his anguish and regret and guilt and everything sort of in that moment, which I thought was fantastic. And but then you've got the problem of, well, he just left him on the thing, you know, that's twice that Obi-Wan Kenobi has left Anakin / Darth Vader, and he didn't get the job done. So one could argue that everything that happens following that, then, you know, Vader, you know, capturing the rebels and stuff, and, you know, allowing a Death Star, two Death Stars to be built, etc., 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 it's all on him in the end. And so, yeah, it does create some issues, but, you know, it was nice to have them, those two, back again. It was nice to see that, you know, well, the fandom were very critical of new characters and stuff like that, it has been nice to see the sort of reevaluation of the original trilogy and stuff like that, and people sort of coming around to Hayden Christensen's performance and stuff like that. Will we see a Jar Jar Binks reappraisal? Who knows? But I mean, there were a couple of cameos. There was one which was hinted at the beginning, and it was like, well, they've said it, so if they do not fulfill that in the final episode, you know, they're just trolling the fans now. I thought it was going to come potentially earlier. I thought it was going to come during that battle, but it didn't. But at the very, very end, we did get the return of Force Ghost Qui-Gon Jinn. What did you make of it? You weren't a fan then.
It was so bad, wasn't it? Like, you knew it was coming. I had it in pencil my head as, like, be like the last minute or so of the show, and then he pops up, and Liam Neeson just looks like he couldn't give less of a shit as well. You know, just like, oh, I've just been waiting for you. Yeah, oh, I've been waiting for you. Oh, I know you were. It was you all along, Obi-Wan Kenobi, blah, blah, blah.
You weren't ready
to see
me, i.e. I wasn't ready to come back. I wasn't ready to sign the contract, but now I am. So there we go. I mean, there's gonna have to be an awkward conversation between Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn, isn't there? In the fact that he's like, Master, I hate to break it to you, but since you died, Darth Maul, you know, got cut in half, survived, you know, got mechanical legs, he was fine. The Grand Inquisitor, he got stabbed through the stomach with a lightsaber, he was fine, apparently. Reva got stabbed in the stomach with a lightsaber, she was fine. I mean, why did you just give up and die? It's like, you know, you didn't need to die. Your wound was clearly cauterized. It's like, I mean, you've got to feel bad for Qui-Gon, haven't you? You really did get the short end of the stick on that one.
It just was very poorly done, wasn't it? Where you just kind of think, like, it just felt unnecessary. Like, they just knew that they had to do it. It was a box tick exercise. I think I saw a thing where it was like, you know...
Oh, is that it? That one line, and then let's just... Well, he could have at least summoned a force camel to walk. He's just going to be walking along next to him on his camel.
Yeah, they just walk off into the sunset together, and you're just kind of rolling your eyes, and, you know, you just know, again, it appeals to the worst sides of fandom to kind of do that sort of plot thing. So, yeah, just another really silly decision, like, that, you know, Ewan McGregor as an actor is really should be above this kind of nonsense and TV show, and it just was a shame to see him being dragged down into this kind of crap.
I mean, for me, I think the biggest problem that the series had was actually, like, the second last scene, where he sort of drops off a toy for Luke Skywalker, which, you know, he's still got, you know, 9 years later, he's still playing with that little T-16 toy. And it then potentially hints that, well, something else must happen between then and A New Hope. So we might get a series two, because in Star Wars A New Hope, you know, he's like, I wonder if he meant old Ben. And then Owen's like, oh, that wizard's just a crazy old man. And I believe Obi-Wan died about the same time as your father. And it's like, well, at the end of this series, the two of them were on pretty good terms. You know, he's like, hey, do you want to come and meet him and stuff? To the point where we get the hello there, and everyone at home does the Leo, oh my God, he did it, he said the thing. They've been saving up all season just to hit it right at the end. And it's like, well, you know, what happens, you know, at the start of the series, you know, Owen is mad at Obi-Wan and wants him to stay away from the kid. But by the end of it, he's like kind of okay with it. But then that doesn't really tie in with Owen's behavior later on. And also, you know, if people are complaining about, you know, the age difference between Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness in that one, I think people should be asking the same question of Aunt Beru, who's looking pretty sprightly in that one, but then gets very, very old. There must be like something really bad, like a bad... Well, I can't say drought because Tatooine's pretty much sand already, but, you know, they must go through some pretty bad sandstorms and sunstroke in order to get to where they are 9 years later. But for me, that scene just didn't really tie in at the end. I mean, it's, you know, Luke sort of forgetting that he kind of met old Ben, you know, 10 years ago and stuff like that. Or did they even, he just says hello there, he doesn't say I'm Ben Kenobi, I guess. But, you know, that scene in particular just didn't really tie in with what's going to come next. I think for me, it's like, so I think overall we were both kind of like, yay for you, McGregor, but was it needed? It was nice to see him again, but for me, it didn't really do anything. I would have preferred a completely different story that didn't tie in with anything. You know, that's what we used to get as kids. I mean, I don't know if you read, I mean, I'm assuming Star Trek probably had the same, but like extended universe novels and stuff like that, which filled in the gaps between the stories. That kind of stuff I really enjoyed. Obviously, I think a lot of that is now no longer canon. And, you know, it's all been replaced with the Clone Wars and sort of Rebels TV series and stuff like that, which I haven't watched myself. But, I mean, yeah, that kind of thing would have been my preferred option, just a completely disconnected story of him doing his thing. And then, because I think that's, I mean, sort of tying into their other, Disney's other sort of main project being the Marvel shows and stuff like that, I think the series and stuff which have been most successful as of late are the ones which aren't actually overly tied into the ongoing Marvel universes. Like, you might get a little nod or a couple of references, but they're their own sort of self-contained story. I think if you worry about tying it in too much, then it's not its own thing, and I think it suffers for that. I mean, what do you think, I guess, is the future for these Star Wars series? Because there's plenty more to go, and I don't know if you're planning on attending Star Wars Celebration in April when it comes to London. I know you did one. Did you do the Rogue One?
I did the Rogue One, and I also committed to the bit and spent overnight queuing to get a pass to get into the panel to experience that. So I've done like the proper Star Wars experience where I've been on the floor. We got pizzas from Kathy Kennedy, you know, delivered. You know, that's all stuff really good. I mean, I just kind of went along with it, and you know, it was an interesting experience. I think if you're a fan, it would just be like, you know, the best. But I think ultimately with Star Wars is I just find it inherently, you know, the main concept of it all quite boring, and it's just sort of done to death by now, and it's just like it needs to do something so wildly different. You know, I think there was maybe talk of Rian Johnson's you know, trilogy being wild away from that, and I think there's talk of Taiki Waititi's, you know, thing being completely different from that, and you know, that's probably the closest it's going to get. It just needs to go away and do something different. You know, it's least with, you know, Star Trek, the universe is so big and it can kind of tap into that quite well for at points, whereas Star Wars just seems to be kind of still playing in such a very shallow pool. And you know, I can't imagine how boring it must be when, you know, I'm bored by a bunch of films and a handful of the TV shows episodes that I've watched, when there's Clone Wars going over the same stuff, and I'm sure the fans love it, but you know, for an average viewer that you need to keep getting into these films, I'm pretty checked out. And based on the box office returns for perhaps the Rise of Skywalker, but in particular Solo, etc., you know, they are losing the numbers that they were guaranteeing at the start. And Star Wars should always feel like an event. You know, Star Trek is the episodic one that rocks the TV world, and you know, you kind of get your weekly doses of it. Star Wars is meant to be the event, and it's no longer that at all.
Yeah, no, it has the Force is struggling, I think, with this one. I think the problem is that they've had, I mean, it seems from what I gather from recent interviews and stuff like that, is their future is going to be in, well, I say long form, well, kind of short to medium form storytelling, in terms of sort of like 6-episode series and stuff like that, and then the occasional film, I think. And I think, we all saw it with the sequel trilogy, and the fact that they had J.J. Abrams, and then they had Rian Johnson, and then they had, Colin Trevorrow, but then back to J.J. Abrams. There was no cohesive plan. You know, Kathleen Kennedy's, you know, done a good job, but I think they need to have like some sort of person on who's overseen everything to make sure that it all sort of ties in. And they just, I think their problem is that I think they need to take more of a risk. You know, they're so reliant, and you know, oh, we don't want to, you know, mess with the fans. You know, we can't have, you know, young, you know, can't replace the original trilogy people, you know, it just doesn't work and stuff like that. And it's like, well, just take a risk, give us new characters. You know, this is a whole world out there, you know, a whole universe out there, and you're still obsessed with the Skywalkers. And yeah, if I think, what's it, this Andor series coming out and stuff like that, and there's a series with Jude Law, I think, something. But it's like, if there's another series set on Tatooine, it's like, I mean, I'm sure like sand is, you know, cheap to come by, and therefore you could set anything on a desert planet, but it's just, I mean, come on, you can go anywhere. You don't need to be stuck on the same planet. And it's like, yeah, give us something new. And I think people are, well, I say people seem to, I think, are also maybe getting a bit burnt out with Marvel. I think the problem was with that, the pandemic shutting everything down for a while, with the, we had, you know, no films for like a year or so, and then we had a big backlog. And but, you know, Doctor Strange, you know, is just shy of under a billion. Thor will probably do over a billion, so, you know, people are still going to go see them and stuff like that. But I think, yeah, we need to sort of pump the brakes. You know, there is an audience for, I'm not going to say original filmmaking, but a different style of filmmaking. The fact that Top Gun Maverick, which for me is probably the best blockbuster of the year, along with Batman, has just grossed over a billion. So, you know, 36-year-old sequel to a film which, you know, people never really cried out for a sequel for, but, you know, uses real effects and stuff like that. Good storytelling, good old-fashioned, excellent time in the movies. That's what, you know, people want to see that. You know, we don't need to see the same stories and same characters recycled ad infinitum to the point where, yeah, we get tired of them. I think, yeah, they need to pick and choose their battles a bit more.
Yeah, and there's enough content now on Disney Plus that they don't need to just rely on pumping in Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, it got to the point where we have a new Marvel series and a new Star Wars series overlapping, and it's like, I mean, just give us, you know, a break, you know, just let Obi-Wan finish and then start with Miss Marvel. Unless, of course, something happens in Miss Marvel that directly ties into Thor, and that's why it needs to come out before Thor is out. I don't know, just speculating there. But yeah, so yeah, Star Wars. I'm going to pump the brakes. Will I still buy tickets for Star Wars Celebration? I haven't been to one before. I don't know. It's
worth going. I'd go for a couple of days. You know, it's worth doing.
I'm not. I've gone off Taika Waititi, and I just know that the only real announcements is probably going to be the one about the Taika Waititi film. So,
I think they used to be bigger and better things. I mean, you think back to a couple of years ago, they would have like the live stream of the conventions for announcing the films and so on. And Rogue One, you know, seeing that kind of Force Awakens style event, I was like, oh, yeah, I really want to experience that.
I think next year is coming. It's kind of just the wrong time to get anything that will be like really worth it. But yeah. I don't think it's much more to buy a 4-day pass as opposed to like a couple of day passes. So yeah, I might go down. We'll see. But I've kind of got to make my decision soon because tickets go on sale tomorrow. Well, tomorrow as in when this episode drops.
It won't sell out.
Well, certainly not. I don't know. £800 Jedi Master Pass, so you get to queue jump and you get loads of exclusive merch. I'd probably end up, you know, bankrupting myself on the merch. I think it's probably more than anything.
Sounds better than the $2,000 a night, $2,000 stay hotel.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, that's something, again, I'm never going to be able to do. And yeah, don't price fans out of Star Wars, you know? Just let us all enjoy it. So, yeah, Obi-Wan. Go see it for Ewan McGregor. Don't go see it for the storyline. So yeah, we'll be back potentially next week, perhaps with our rundown of the best films that we've seen so far and looking ahead for the rest of the year. So yeah, may the Force be with you, always.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.